How have you not seen this? Welcome back to How Have You Not Seen This. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today, I am joined by my guest, Eric Tate.
Hello.
And we just watched Tombstone.
Yay, Tombstone.
Major motion picture, obviously. Major studio picture is what I meant to say. Western with Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, whole bunch of people. I'll get into that later on, but pretty critically acclaimed, financially successful film. It can be found on Netflix for anyone who doesn't own it, which I don't know why you wouldn't. It's a wonderful movie. Did very well. Made a lot of lists as far as some of the best, more contemporary Westerns ever made. It's a great story. Takes some liberties with the Earp's Tale, which we'll get into. But it did very well. And again, this was around the time where Kurt Russell was still a pretty big box office draw. So, pretty huge picture. Eric, how have you not seen this?
I don't know.
Okay.
I guess it's just one of those that I tend to be more into sci-fi and fantasy novel, or fantasy novels. I read books, Dustin.
I know you're a nerd.
No, I tend to be more into sci-fi and fantasy, and so I just don't watch a lot of Westerns. I mean, I have seen Wild Wild West.
Oh. And, it's like a little melding of the two.
I think Maverick is pretty much like the extent of my Western movie stuff. I had an ex-girlfriend who was really into, I think, The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, great movie.
But I never watched it with her.
Okay. That's someone. I think it's funny you mentioned Maverick. I actually like Maverick a lot. I think really Maverick is a pretty underrated movie.
It's a great movie with a horrible example of a bottom deal. It's got the worst cheating scene ever.
But most importantly, it had Mel Gibson at a time where we could still love him without having to feel ethically conflicted about liking Mel Gibson still.
Yes. Yes.
And of course James Garner, who is just wonderful in that movie as well.
I don't mean to get too far off topic, but Maverick is the reason that I saw The Notebook.
So wait, hold on. Because of James Garner's performance in Maverick, that's why you saw The Notebook?
Yeah, because James Garner is in
The Notebook. Yeah, Eric, I had a girlfriend once, I've seen The Notebook.
So, I was dating a girl, and she said, hey, let's go see The Notebook. This is back when it was in theaters.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, who's in it? And she told me the cast, and I was like, James Garner? The only thing I knew of James Garner at the time was that he was Brett Maverick.
Oh.
And then he was in Maverick, and I was like, yeah. And I believe that I thought that The Notebook. I believe. I don't really know exactly why I connected. Like, oh yeah, Maverick. The Notebook will be exactly like that. But yeah.
Yeah, The Notebook. Everybody's favorite movie about playing poker on a riverboat.
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite movie about a Kenny Rogers song feels a little funnier and a little less heavy on existential crises.
Exactly. But I think, you know, I guess that's why I never saw Tombstone, is I just generally don't watch a lot of Westerns.
Okay.
When I lived in Los Angeles, I lived with some people who watched Westerns all the time.
Really?
And so, but it wasn't like, hey, let's all go watch a Western. It was just like Western movies were always on the television.
Yeah.
So, I just grew to just be like, I'm going to go...
Just kind of tune it out.
I'm going to go somewhere else and watch CNN.
Yeah.
So I just... Yeah, I didn't... I've avoided Tombstone. But I am glad that you've sat me down and watched this. It's way better than the last movie we watched.
Yeah. Let's not get into that too heavily.
All right.
That's cool though. So like... what is your, like, do you have a, like, have you seen, like, other Westerns, like, in their entirety, or, like, is Maverick, like, is that really it? Or is that just, like, your go-to, like, that you know you can go to that?
I think Maverick is really, like, it.
Okay.
Excuse me. Maverick is mostly it. Now, when I was a kid, I played the role-playing game Deadlands.
Oh, of course, so I'm familiar with that.
I used to speak a lot in a Western accent.
Yeah. Oh, it's fun.
Yeah, while sitting in the back of a Books-A-Million. So mostly my experience with westerns is a spaghetti western horror role playing game.
Yeah.
And a Mel Gibson movie.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I went through a huge. It's definitely declined over the last year or so. Mm-hmm. But from like 2009 on, I was in a huge western / samurai kick. Like, where I would just gobble up anything that had to do with either of them.
I can see why. I mean, it's mostly, like, people shooting guns at each other. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it's really cool. And the language is fucking amazing.
Yes.
Like, the Tombstone's one of my favorite examples of dialogue in a Western. A lot of the John Wayne movies are great for it. I just had one in my head. Oh, True Grit, the more recent one that the Coen brothers did.
I saw that. I enjoyed that too. Really enjoyed True Grit.
True Grit is amazing.
I saw it in a theater where it was really weird because it didn't have like seats. It had like cuddle couches.
Okay.
I was with my cousin and we did not cuddle.
That's
what I remember from True Grit was being in an awkward cuddle couch with my cousin.
I remember seeing that movie 3 times in the theater.
Yeah.
I saw that in Toy Story 3 the same amount of times in the theaters. And I think Toy Story 3 ended up just edging out True Grit as my favorite because Toy Story 3 made me cry.
Well, fair enough.
But, alright, so let's get back to Tombstone. So, as I mentioned earlier, great cast in this movie. Yeah. You've got Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, Dana Delaney, Bill Paxton, Powers Booth, who later goes on to be in the show Deadwood, which is set in a boomtown very much like Tombstone, and he's fucking phenomenal. And that Michael Biehn from the first Terminator, Jason Priestley, Terry O'Quinn, John Locke from Lost, Michael Rooker from Walking Dead and Guardians of the Galaxy, Dana Delaney. But
let's not forget Kurt Russell's mustache.
Yes, the real stars.
Mustache. John Locke's mustache. Mm-hmm. The mustaches in this movie were just amazing.
All over the point. Michael Biehn's mustache.
All of them were fucking epic. And just like, not one of them was like a disappointment. Like, every mustache was different. It had its own character, its own quirks. It was, I mean, some of them looked like they'd been welded onto somebody's face. It was just amazing. And that, I truly believe, is like the quintessential Val Kilmer mustache. I think that.
Okay. Marry, fuck, kill. Val Kilmer's mustache. Kurt Russell's mustache. Sam Elliott's mustache.
Oh, okay. That's so tough.
Right? They're all good.
Why do I have to kill. Well, I'm going to have
that, I didn't invent the game, Eric.
I'm going to have to say. Kill Val Kilmer's mustache because it's covered in consumption.
Oh, true. Good call. Good call. Looking out for your health.
I'm going to marry Kurt Russell's mustache and fuck Sam Elliott's mustache.
How could you not?
Yeah, that is... It's so huge and voluminous. That is... It is... I really want to make a movie with just their mustaches.
I love that no matter what role he's playing in, every part of me wants to believe Sam Elliott is just... a cowboy who is just completely, like, somehow through some crazy time travel incident, was transported from the 1880s from the Wild West to here. Even when he's not playing a cowboy, he oozes that. Like, even when he was on Parks and Rec, as, like, the complete counter of the characters he usually plays, like, the complete opposite of Ron Swanson, that character, like, he's still, like... The way he walks, like, the drawl, like, his gait shows, like, this guy is a cowboy. And thank you for smoking. He's literally the Marlboro Man.
Yes.
Which is, like, I think there are so few actors, like, even
his
more so...
His career is built around his mustache.
Well, that, and, like, I would argue even more than a John Wayne or a Clint Eastwood, like, I think he's the most iconic version of what you think a cowboy is. Yes. Like, obviously, Eastwood and Wayne definitely made careers playing those characters. Mm-hmm. They also made careers playing, like, military characters and other stuff, too. Sam Elliott obviously has played other characters, too. But Sam Elliott looks like a real fucking cowboy.
And more than that, like, what a real cowboy would actually be like.
Yes.
Not just looks like it, but just acts like it the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, all right, well, we're going to go do this, and then I'm going to go home, and I'm going to have me some dinner. And just, like, that, like... he makes you want to think that there are good people in this world. There are not, but he makes you want to think that.
Makes you
want
to believe it.
Yeah, it's just, he's so wonderful.
Sam Elliott walks into bars and orders Sioux City sarsaparillas.
Yes.
Like, every bar he goes into.
I want to cuddle with his mustache.
Oh, it's a perfect mustache.
Yeah. It was, you know, I think that one of the things that I really liked about the movie, not to get all nerdy and sciencey on this.
No, that's,
like,
please.
For most of the movie, when somebody gets shot, they're not, like, flying back.
Yeah.
And, like, because, like, I read a study not too long ago that, like, the only reason that people fall down when they get shot is, it has nothing to do with physics. It's because that's what they've seen in movies.
Yeah.
Like, these guys, like, a lot of the people in this movie, like, don't fall down until they realize they've been shot.
Yeah.
Or they're, like, close to death or something like that.
Or they get kneecapped.
Yeah, they get shot in, like, a painful place where they have to fall down. Or where they physically can't stand anymore. There's not the constant, like six-shooter and then the guy, like, flies backwards or something like
that.
It's not entirely realistic, but it is more realistic than a lot of other movies with guns.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I like the scene that jumps to mind for me is the gunfight at the OK Corral when they just unload into Thomas Hayden Church and he's just, like, flailing about like a rag doll.
Yeah.
Like, still staying up in spite of that.
Yeah, and he, in just one or two shots and they're not out of it. Because, like, you don't, until you actually look at it, you wouldn't realize that you've gotten shot because it moves through you too fast.
Yeah, definitely.
There's so many, like, accounts of actually, like, of people who've been shot where it's like, yeah, I was still going, and then I realized later that I'd been shot. Like that.
Yeah.
And the gunfight at the OK Corral scene is really, it's really well done from my, like, they fired 30 bullets in 30 seconds. Like, it's not a terribly long scene.
It feels
like it's a long time, but
yeah, it's pretty close. The real gunfight at the OK Corral lasted 30 seconds.
Yeah, and they fired.
The scene lasted maybe a minute and a half, tops. And that's, like, from the beginning of them, like, approaching till, like, Ike Clanton fleeing. Yeah.
Where it gets less realistic is the last 25 minutes of the movie, which is just Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer taking the other $25 million that the movie cost and using it to shoot guns on horses.
Yeah.
Well, most of the money in that movie is in them flinging lead at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Well, that was one. I mentioned this as we were watching it, some of the liberties they took with the story. Mm-hmm. That's one of them.
Yeah.
Gunfight at the OK Corral, obviously, one of the most famous gunfights of Wild West history really happened. The Earp Vendetta ride also really happened.
Yeah. But not a murderous rampage. Like,
no.
Only a couple of people were killed.
Four people were killed.
And a lot of people were arrested or just ran off and were never heard from again.
Yes, exactly. So over the course of their ride in the movie, they kill, a conservative estimate, 20-plus cowboys.
Easily.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So definitely padding the figures because, I think it would be an interesting to watch them, because a lot of that was just, like, they spent a long time just tracking them.
Yeah.
But, of course, you don't want to put that in your movie, or most audiences don't want to see it. They want to see is, like, all right, show us this fucking dope shootout at the Springs where Kurt Russell just wades halfway through a creek and just starts unloading into Powers' booth.
How many other people miss him as he's wading into this? Because, like, I realize the thing about that is that it's not like anybody else is shooting when he's wading in there and people are, like, ducking for cover. It's all people going, no, why are you doing that on his side?
Yeah.
And nobody's providing him cover fire.
Yeah.
Everybody else on the other side is just shooting bullet after bullet, round after round, and he is completely, he's never harmed. Not once is Kurt Russell ever harmed.
I will say, that is maybe the most accurate thing about this movie. Because guns around that time sucked as far as accuracy.
Yeah.
Because, like, the whole myth of, like, the pistols at 30 paces or whatever, like, the gun, like, the showdowns, like, in High Noon. Like, you fire off a shot from any further than essentially point-blank range, and that's when they're all the most on target, is when they're feet away from who they're shooting at.
Yeah.
So, like, just, yeah, wildly inaccurate guns.
I was recently reading about bullets I can't remember exactly when they were, but somebody had invented a gun that shot square bullets. And because this guy thought that square bullets were what you shot Muslims with, and round bullets were what you shot Christians with. It's just a fact.
Yeah, no.
I don't have enough details, but if you just look up square bullets
square
for Muslims,
bullets.
It's a real thing. And it was, you can't rifle a square bullet.
No.
So it has, like, no accuracy. So
yeah.
It would just. So.
Also, square bullets for Muslims sounds like the absolute worst shitty hardcore band in the world. Terrible band name.
It was a good movie, though.
Yeah. What, square bullets, bullets for Muslims?
No, Tombstone. I really, really liked it.
Yeah. One of the other things I didn't even mention. Billy Zane.
Yeah. The Phantom. Who is terrible with guns in this movie.
Yep.
Billy Zane really studied up on guns and punching.
Well, in this he studied up on how to be an actor and how to get shot. He boned up on defending a woman's honor with his words, not with his bullets.
Okay.
And for his trouble, he was shot.
I think the greatest part of the movie is clearly Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, yeah, we got...
As the terrible Pharaoh dealer.
As Johnny Tyler.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It just standing there, getting hit in the face by Kurt Russell over and over again, knowing that he could totally take Kurt Russell.
That's such a great scene, too. Because I love that the movie gives us, like, three instances, like, before Kurt Russell even fires a gun. Mm-hmm. Like, just showing us, like, what a resolute badass he is. Because there's the scene with the kid whipping his horse right when they get off the train when we first meet him. Mm-hmm. There's the standoff with Billy Bob Thornton, where he just slaps him around repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And then there's the standoff when he puts the gun into Ike Clanton's face after... Curly Bill kills the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Like almost halfway through the movie at that point, we've seen all these examples of Kurt Russell just being badass.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't fired a shot yet. Mm-hmm. A single time.
And then when he does fire a shot,
oh,
look out.
The old, the Clantons and the McLowrys gunned down in the OK Corral.
I would watch that movie again.
It's a great movie. It's probably in my top five westerns of all time.
It's definitely in my top five westerns.
Yeah. So, let's see. Maverick, Tombstone, -, right? So.
Yeah, well, I think... what else have I seen? No other westerns.
Well, I guess Wild Wild West technically counts, but...
Yeah.
I don't think that's on anyone's favorite list.
No... No, that's on the list of movies that you don't get prosecuted for if you download it illegally. They take you in front of the judge. What's he here for? He downloaded Wild Wild West without paying for it. You're free to go.
Yeah, no jury in the world would convict him. Throwing this case out. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
That uncomfortable scene where Kenneth Branagh is just racist for 3 minutes to Will Smith, and Will Smith just makes terrible jokes about disabled people?
The weirdest thing about Tombstone, I just realized this, we were talking about this earlier, is I feel like there's a lot of stuff left on the cutting room floor in regards to the suffragette movement, because they're just kind of in the background. But the thing is, like, it's not... I don't know if this is just, like, Kurt Russell standing up back when this movie was made and being like, I think that we need to take women more seriously, guys, and really think about where they are. Or if it was just, like, I'm going to be really true to Tombstone and have this, or if there was some sort of subplot somewhere, because it's super obvious. There's two clear points where you're like, oh, suffragettes are totally going to play into this movie, because there they are with the big red wagon, or there's whether she is with the sandwich board or the ring of the bell,
mm-hmm.
and it like focuses on her, and then you never see it again.
Yeah.
You just never do. It's really weird.
I think it's just world building. Like, I think that's just, like, adding in elements of the era to further sell the believability of the entire movie.
I think that's a fine and wonderful portion of world building.
But case in point, I think the same thing with the theater scene. Like, that's very much, like, you honestly, you could probably have lost a good chunk of that. And,
yes.
like, introduce those characters some other way. Mm-hmm. There's a solid, like, 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
of exposition and character introductions.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are a lot of characters, like, just thrown at us And then the focus still is really only on Wyatt Earp.
I guess my point about the suffragette thing is not so much that it's an exposition and a world building. It's just that it is clearly focused on, and it's clearly there's world building, and then there's going, hey, look at this. This is definitely here. And, and that's kind of what it does. I would like to agree with you that it's world building. I do agree with it as world building, but I feel like
there's more to it. Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
And I couldn't tell you what it was. It was just it's.
But I think it's interesting that there's a focus on that. But this movie definitely fails the Bechdel test as far as like females.
Oh yeah,
because like the only two females really at the forefront. They're both defined around their relationship to Wyatt Earp.
Mm-hmm.
One is just portrayed as an opium addicted nag,
mm-hmm.
and then the other is like the sexually empowered woman who is only interested in men and like a fast lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
which totally fine. But like, and Dana Delaney again is great as that character, but they're definitely like, there's not much substance either of those characters.
A fair point.
Yeah.
Speaking of world building and opium, one I'd forgotten until you said that, how much opium plays into the Wild West.
Yeah.
And two, how much fun it would be to be the chairman of the nonpartisan anti-China movie.
That's...
I
always forget about that until I watch it and I hear that line.
That's another one of those things that makes me kind of go... There was something that was left out when they were filming this that was originally in the script, because it's such an odd thing to say.
Yeah.
That it's there must have been some other like subplot, because there's all these subplots throughout.
Oh yeah, there's a lot.
And a lot of them get resolved, but some of them don't. And some of them and there's points there where it feels like when this movie was originally written, the very first draft of it, it must have been 500 pages. It must have been the War and Peace of films, because there were so many subplots that are introduced and then just cast by the wayside.
Yeah, there is an extended director's cut, which is what I own. It's not what we watched. I'm trying to pull it up in here. I remember there are some differences.
Hmm.
And I can't seem to find a listing of them.
I know that Chinese immigration at the time was a huge deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, primarily because they built our railroads and did a fine job of it. But you had the same thing out east with the anti-Irish leagues, mm-hmm. and all over the place. There was this constant like we're a nation of immigrants who don't want any more immigrants, except for the ones who are going to build stuff and then leave.
Yep.
But it's. Because you never really hear any other racism throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
there's nothing that talks about black people or slavery or anything like that. It's just this one, and also a character who you find out is allied with the goons, the villains of the film.
Yeah.
With all the cowboys who spend a lot of their time in Chinese opium dens.
Yeah,
so it's a very blatant way of him throwing them off the trail that he is not, in fact, a lawman.
Uh-huh. Which,
I didn't need him to be racist as soon as he was also the tax collector and the...
Yeah, and everything else. Like, but his mustache and his bowler is indication that this character is corrupt, to say the least. I think it's kind of interesting. This is like... I feel like most times in a Western... Particularly post-Civil War Westerns, there's usually some mention of the Civil War, because usually there's a character that fought for one side or the other that's thrown in. And actually, the character I was reading of Texas Jack Vermillion, who is one of the guys that rides with Wyatt on the Vendetta ride at the end, did fight for the Confederacy. No mention of that in the film whatsoever, and maybe it didn't necessarily bear... mentioning, but it's weird what they choose to reference from that period and what they don't.
It really is bizarre, now that you mention that.
And I'm remembering a couple of the scenes. There's one scene where Doc Holliday parts ways with Kate, his Hungarian mistress.
Yeah.
That is in the extended cut that I have. I just remembered that. There's actually... I still think it's weird that they cut this out of the theatrical version... because there's actually a scene that shows McMaster's, Michael Rooker's character, meeting with Johnny Ringo and the Cowboys after they go to Henry Hooker's ranch to post up. Mm-hmm. So you see that conversation, which is what happens before they drag McMaster's body back to the ranch and tell Wyatt where to meet Johnny Ringo and everything.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's a very abrupt jump.
Yeah.
And, like, you could... Like,
I even had to ask, I was like...
Yeah.
Like, I was admittedly just coming up with new names for the Tombstone sequels. but all of a sudden he's just dead.
Yeah, yeah. And even, like, even the fourth or fifth time I watched, like, the VHS, like, when I was in school, like, when I was in high school and everything, like, when I was younger and it came out and I watched it for the first time, I still remember thinking, I was like, did I miss a scene?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know who this is because they address him by name, which they fucking have to, because you mm-hmm. can't recognize the corpse. Mm-hmm. So, like, the only thing you could do is, like, all right, there's five of them. All right, this one is the one that's missing, and they just said his name. But, yeah, like, you don't get any context for that. It just happens.
There's so many. And you know, the other weird thing is right before the gunfight at the OK Corral is there's a building on fire.
Yeah, yeah. And when they're walking down the street.
With no, I mean, like, and fires at the time were a horrible, horrible thing because you didn't really have a fire brigade. You're out in a part of the country where mm-hmm. water is scarce, and so to expend the resources of water to put out a building is a huge expenditure of resources. And just, they're walking by, and all of a sudden, you have no idea if it's one of their cottages. For a second, I thought it was the Oriental, the bar that they played the
yeah.
heroin. I have no idea why that building is on fire.
Just to set the tone and make them look badass. That's funny, because we didn't see it because Netflix cut it off, but when the credits start rolling,
mm-hmm.
It's just that footage of them walking to the OK Corral past the burning building
mm-hmm.
for like a minute before it cuts to the mm-hmm. the black screen with the credits.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's weird. That like that's a weird thing to go to for like your credit sequence.
Yeah.
Too. Like, there's some interesting choices.
I mean, it's not weird if you're Kurt Russell and you have that as your screensaver. But
oh man, no. I almost want that as my screensaver. Those four handsome men and their perfect mustaches walking down ready to dispense some justice to the lawless land. I'm on board with that.
It is very bizarre things that they, and you know, what was the other one that I was I can't remember.
Alright. One of the scenes I want to talk about, it's something I didn't think about until this time, is the scene when Johnny Ringo and Doc Holliday first meet in the Faro Bar.
Yeah.
And they start insulting each other in Latin.
Yes.
No subtitles.
Yeah.
Which, and I've looked it up and I've read the translations,
mm-hmm.
and I don't remember all of them, but I remember the very first one. It's In Vino Veritas.
Yeah.
Which is... yeah, exactly. And then there's a bunch of other stuff after that.
Yeah.
But, like, I was thinking about it, I was like, man, it'd be nice, like, if the subtitles were here. And then I thought about it as we're watching, I was like, I don't think it matters what they're saying.
Because
you completely get the subtext. Like, you get the tone of the scene, and you know that they're being... Like, they're boiling towards each other, like, trying to goad each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think that's a really interesting choice, because most movies would be like, oh, no, people have to know what they're saying. I was like, I don't think they do.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to see these two dudes insulting each other in Klingon. They sound angry. They're probably going to fight each other by the time they're done talking.
I think I liked the movie all the more for all of the highly unusual choices that are made throughout the film.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was reading on Wikipedia. Didn't like Kurt Russell like ghost direct this or something?
Yes, because George P. Cosmatos did this, I'm trying to check because he also did Rambo First Blood Part 2,
mm-hmm.
Which and Stallone brought him in to do that. Stallone actually recommended this director to Russell, if I remember,
mm-hmm.
because Stallone pretty much did the same thing on First Blood Part 2.
So Kurt Russell directed anything before this?
I don't believe so. And I think directing is very loose.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think he was in the chair or anything necessarily. But, like, he definitely... I think he had a lot of influence
mm-hmm.
Over the director. I think is more what happened than anything.
Because he was, like, the main driving force behind it getting made.
Yeah.
He like put together the financing, made the deal with Disney, all the stuff, did some of the casting. Picked the mustaches.
Picked the mustache. What? What if the mustaches were, like, I know this isn't how they did it, but what if Kurt Russell just picked, like, 20 mustaches, threw them in a hat, and each actor had to pick their mustache, and that's what they ended up with?
I firmly believe that the length of one's mustache is a correlation to how many men they've killed.
I think that's true of the Earp brothers and no one else.
No, because Doc Holliday's mustache gets longer as the movie goes on.
True, but Doc Holliday has killed men before, and it's still relatively short, though.
It's a disguise. He's painted the rest of his mustache skin color.
He is at the barber in one scene.
Yeah.
Maybe trimming the mustache up.
Mm-hmm.
Because Virgil, Bill Paxton's... Mm-hmm. Or, no, Morgan, Bill Paxton's character's mustache, very short.
Yes.
And then he kills the one guy at the OK Corral. That's the first person, and the only person he kills, because he, in turn, gets killed later.
Yeah.
Sam Elliott. Long mustache, because he's been at it longer.
Mm-hmm.
Never says how many men he's killed, but you get the feeling he's probably had to stand his ground a lot and kill a lot of cattle rustlers.
He's clearly the oldest brother, and he's been a lawman before.
Yeah, Wyatt. Longer than Wyatt, even.
Yeah.
And Wyatt's only killed the one.
Yeah, which is why his mustache was only had just a little bit of a curl to it.
Yeah.
While it was magnificent, it was still not quite as long as everybody else's.
Oh, no. Yeah. How could it be?
And, of course, the cowboys, all big, long, scraggly mustaches. Mm-hmm.
Big ones.
Yes.
Big ol' mustache.
Yes.
Cool. Is there anything else you wanted to hit on before we wrap it up with our favorite moments?
I don't think so.
All right. What's favorite moment?
Well, obviously, it's every scene that Kurt Russell's mustache.
Oh, of course.
But I think, overall, my favorite one is probably him and Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
That's the one I keep coming back to because. One, I love the game Pharaoh.
Yeah,
and I'm always out there bucking the tiger. And two, it's just a really really good scene with two very good actors.
That's
very well written, mm-hmm. and followed up by an excellent humorous scene.
Yeah,
where Doc Holliday just talks Billy Bob, like, confuses Billy Bob Thornton into putting his shotgun down.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot you were there.
Yeah.
For me, I definitely agree with the Billy Bob Thornton scene. Oh, that's a great scene. It's between every interaction with Doc Holliday and Johnny Ringo.
Yeah.
This honestly, I love Michael Biehn, and I wish he got more high profile roles like this because, like, really the biggest things he's got, like, it's this and why am I blanking on his name from Terminator? Kyle. I can't believe I'm forgetting this. The guy from the first one, he goes back in time to protect Sarah Connor.
I don't know his name. I know the role and I know the movie, but I don't remember the actor's name.
Oh man. Well, Michael Biehn's the actor.
Yeah.
Kyle's the character, and I'm trying to.
Oh. Connor.
No. Oh, and he was Corporal Hicks in Aliens. Another great role.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
2 seconds. We're gonna find it really quick. Kyle Reese.
Yes.
Kyle Reese. I can't believe I forgot that. So yeah, every scene with Doc Holliday and Michael Biehn, Johnny Ringo's character, fucking amazing. Especially the scene when they have the gun spinning and then the cup spinning. That's such a funny scene. And then the scene at the train station right after the Earps leave Tombstone.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that chills down my spine still every time. And the guy just walks up. Yeah. Hey, Maddie, where's what? Right behind you, blam! Shotgun is like, oh god! And then he lays on that pale horse speech.
Yes,
and it's just such a fucking great scene.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
the whole movie's great.
Wonderful. And Kurt Russell is just good at that. Like,
like
Kurt Russell is good at being very calm and then like flying up to 11 with rage and selling it better than almost any handsome mustachioed man can. Cool. I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Right.
Eric Tate, thank you so much for coming on, doing the podcast again.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to How Have You Not Seen This? If you enjoyed the podcast, like the page on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also leave us a rating or a review. you're interested in donating to the podcast, you can do so through the PayPal link at the Podomatic website, howhaveyounotseenthis.podomatic.com. You can also send any questions, comments for the show to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.